And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, in thinking about our show this week, I thought, well, there's not much happening when all of a sudden things caught up at the end of the week, and it turned out a lot happened. And most of what it was, as I could see it, were actions that were diversions against democracy. Kooky statements, preposterous activity, dangerous activity, all kinds of things all of a sudden piling up, the effect of which was to make sure that the American constitutional system does not work. That the American example, the American model, the so-called American experiment, the American lesson to the world about how a democratic system can function strikes out. Done. Finished. That's what it seemed like. Some of it was ridiculous. I mean, some of it were statements by the types like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who decided that we don't have any need for science. She said this. We don't have any need for science because we have God.
Right. And doesn't believe in evolution. She doesn't, I mean,
doesn't believe that evolution exists, right?
Yeah, but
is it conceivable that God would have created man in the image of Marjorie Taylor Greene, that she represents the acme of God's ambition?
I want to know, if she doesn't believe in science, where does she think those Jewish space lasers come from? You know, did God invent space lasers?
Maybe the Jews took over God.
Well, the Jews were the ones that had the idea of a single deity.
Ah, the idea. But did they actually invade heaven, and are they holding it hostage?
Well, I don't know. Isn't that the old question? Did God create man, or did man create God? But that's
a very serious question.
That's a theological.
Yeah, but we have Louis Gohmert, who has even a better point of view. He wants to know why. This is too much. He wants to know why the Bureau of Land Management can't change the Earth's orbit around the sun to eliminate climate change. And he asked this question of the deputy director of the Bureau of Land Management at a congressional hearing.
Yeah, it was either that or the Forest Service. He asked BLM for a minute there. I was thinking, was it Black Lives Matter that he wanted to
change the Earth's orbit? I miss.
I mean, scientists know that there are minor changes in the wobble of the Earth and things like that, but this is.
But none of them are produced by the Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah. But Gohmert went on to say, you know, I'm not as stupid as people think if you saw my SAT scores. So.
Well, how stupid does he think people think he is?
Well, obviously in his district, not that stupid.
Not that stupid. Wait a minute. What about the lady in Vermont, in Ohio, who suddenly discovered that vaccines cause your body to become a magnet?
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, I don't know what's wrong with that, but assuming it's wrong, it's just too much.
Well, you know, you've heard of somebody being a chick magnet, you know, but that's metaphorical. That's not. She's talking realistically.
She meant it.
She's talking about putting keys on your forehead and having them stick, and things like that. She put
did
one up.
Somebody put it to the test?
Well, she actually did. She had she put something on her chest and it stuck there briefly, and then she took it off. There's a body, you know, the body's own. Properties, it's not dry, the skin, and it can hold it for a little while. Then she tried to put it on her neck, and of course it kept falling off, but that didn't dissuade her. It's hard to believe these things are out there, but it used to be that this was the real fringe. Now when you look at QAnon and stuff like that, you realize it's more than a fringe. It's a significant portion, unfortunately, of the American populace and electorate.
And really, the politicians who are leading the charge on this are completely heedless of the effect of this reactionary ideology and actions based on their reactionary ideology, the effect it has on the real world, the real economy, the real people's lives. I mean, for them, it's all show, it seems to me. Look down in Texas. How many voter registration laws have been proposed by Abbott and his cohorts? 20, I think, right?
Something like that.
20. And the Democrats managed to stop the main one from getting passed by walking out of the assembly just at the last minute when it had to adjourn and no vote could be taken. That was the only thing they could do, right?
Right, and that's only going to be temporary because he's going to call a special session, and they won't be able to do that in a special session, from my understanding. So,
The point is that they've introduced these 20 laws. The point of all of these laws is to make it harder for people to vote.
Right.
And make it harder to administer the election and make it easier for the state legislature to invalidate the results of the election if they don't like the results, even if they have no proof that what they don't like was caused by something illegal.
That's the more serious thing, because it's possible to still get around these laws by having enough people vote and making sure that they vote despite the restrictions. You know, they talk about dropping your ballots off or things like that, but they can still work around that. But if the legislature can come in and say, we're not going to count your vote. In this county, the Democrats won by 50,000 votes, but we're going to say they didn't win despite that. Then what do you do? And that's a serious issue. It comes down to what happened on January 6th, because that was something that they were working at, the actual acceptance of the Electoral College and the certifications by the states. And what's going to happen is these states are not going to certify the winner, or they're going to certify the loser as the winner. And then you're in a real, real interesting situation. I mean, imagine if and don't forget, the way these laws are written, the legislature gets to do that without any input from a gubernatorial veto. Now, many of these states, the governors will go along with it because the legislature and the governors are Republicans. But a place like Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, the governors are Democrats and the legislatures are Republican. And if the legislature can get around a veto by saying that the vetoes don't apply, then you got a real problem. At that point is the destruction of democracy.
And by the way, in these laws, the allegation of fraud is sufficient. You don't have to present proof.
Right. And the intimidation that could go on under these laws. So they're going to have to, you know, really, really work at it. Now, I saw
But look, down in Texas, and this is what I was getting at earlier, in Texas, there have been a movement to organize business owners, corporations, to oppose these voter restrictions, these 20 laws. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty active. They made their point. But then when the legislature adjourned, that coalition more or less fell apart. And it's not clear that it can be put back together again. But in any case, before they fell apart, they made the point that if these voter restriction laws pass, it will cost Texas a lot. It would cost Texas in the next 10 years, they estimated, something like $32 billion in lost income and in less gross product produced, and it will cost also a quarter of a million jobs.
Well,
You're not talking about just playing around with politics and government, what have you. This goes right through the whole of society. A quarter of a million jobs, $30 billion in lost production. Yeah, that's Big Apples.
it is Big Apples, although apples aren't a Texas crop generally. But let me, but Apple Company could be. Let me say that there are three things that I've heard that could try to counter this. You've just touched on one of them, and that's businesses. And we've seen this happen before. We saw it in Indiana when Mike Pence signed that, was it an anti-gay law, and businesses like the NCAA said, we're not going to hold our tournament there. And in North Carolina, we had the same effect. Georgia, we had businesses make statements, but it didn't stop the legislature. The legislature decided that we're going to double down and take away tax breaks from the businesses that protested that were in Georgia. But still, you have business leaders. Now, whether or not they continue to stand up because the Republican Party, with their tax or non-tax policies, make things better for the corporation's bottom line. So how far will corporate heads go? That's one thing. The second thing that I saw was an article by Mona Charon, who you probably know, has been a conservative commentator for years and years and years. And she's become, as many of the true conservatives have, a never Trumper. She's joined that group. And she talked about rewriting the law that has been in effect since, I think, 1876, on how Congress approves of the certifications. That's what was going on January 6th. And she said that law needs to be rewritten in a better way. Now, whether you can get that through a filibuster, I don't know. The third thing that I saw, I thought it was pretty big this week, was on Friday, Merrick Garland gave a speech, and I thought it was a very important speech, and he traced the history of voter suppression, particularly as it affected blacks in America, and how the various legislatures and the courts had conspired, in effect, to undermine any voter protection for these minorities and to make it harder. He pledged. What he said was that we do have laws on the books from the Reconstruction era, and he was going to double the size of the judiciary of the Department of Justice area that enforces voting laws and voting rights
at the Civil Rights Division.
Yeah, I think it's an offshoot of the Civil Rights Division, mm-hmm. and it's going to be just concentrating on voter rights, and it's going to be done within the next 30 days. And so he's taken a serious and an activist approach. We'll see what happens. You know, our Congressman Matt Cartwright funds the Justice Department, and I don't know if they're going to be going to him or not for a supplemental appropriation, or whether they're just going to reallocate the money that they have in the Department of Justice to pay for this. But they're amping up those efforts. Time will tell. I'm not overly optimistic with the way the Supreme Court is, and with Chief Justice Roberts, a known area of approving virtually any voter suppression that Republicans come down to. You just wonder if at some point he says, wait a minute, this is a step too far, a bridge too far, and I don't want my name on a court like we had the Taney court on Dred Scott, or the Korematsu court, or the Plessy versus Ferguson court. He said, I don't want to, we'll see what happens, and whether or not he can bring another vote with him. We'll just have to see. But those are that's a serious issue that's been going on, and the Democrats have not been able to figure out really a good strategy. Of course, the best strategy is to win elections and to win the legislatures on this. But it's been a catch-22, because the Republicans won the vote, and then they gerrymandered the legislature, and then it's hard for the Democrats to overcome that. So
it's especially hard for the Democrats to overcome it if they don't try.
Right. Yeah.
And I had I was privy to a conversation this last week with a person in Pennsylvania who's responsible for organizing the Democratic Party in the 42 counties that are considered rural counties. You know, we have 67 counties in Pennsylvania, 42 are considered right. rural.
Right.
And those rural counties dominate the state legislature. And in those rural counties, you have, in many of them, the voting goes two-thirds Republican, one-third Democrat. And then there's a lot of people who don't vote, and a lot some people who are independent. So the question put to this guy was, what are you going to do to organize in the rural counties that dominate the state legislature so that you can change the composition of the state legislature? And his answer was, nothing. It's a waste of time. Our effort is going to be to just bring out the people who are already Democrats. Now, with that approach, nothing is going to result. If you do nothing, nothing results. That's a guarantee.
Right. You know,
it may be that it takes a long time to get results, but that long time may be the shortest path possible. You know, but if you do nothing, you get no result ever.
Right. You know, it took Stacey Abrams 15 years. She worked at this stuff.
15 years. It's exactly right.
But, you know, and we saw in the last election where we had the write-in ballots, where the Democrats worked hard to get Democrats to write in. Even in the Republican areas, the Democrats, when they started counting the write-in ballots, picked up in all of these counties a fair amount of votes that they didn't have before. And it made a difference. It made a difference.
Well,
in
Pennsylvania, Biden carried Pennsylvania for two reasons. One reason was that that Trump wasn't able to prevail in the suburbs. But the other reason was that Biden limited the Trump margin in the 42 rural counties.
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
And that's where it was.
Yeah.
And you have to say that. You know, you talk about Pennsylvania and the rural counties. There was a scene in the Pennsylvania legislature this week where they were voting on another one of these misogynistic laws that affected women's rights. So this one was on, I believe, abortion, and where they were going to compel the mother or to decide whether to bury or cremate the fetus, make these decisions. And one of the Democrats stood up and he challenged the Republicans. He said, and I want you to, to take a look. All of you, you are 100% white and you're 70% male. And you're passing these laws that affect blacks and women. And he was immediately shouted down, where the Republican leader stood up and condemned his remarks, and the speaker ordered that those remarks be stricken from the record.
On what basis?
The basis is that if you strike it, it's like it never happened. They don't want the criticism.
Not even criticism. That's just a simple arithmetic fact. Either 70% are male and white, or they're not. That's not a criticism. That's an observation.
But this is what they want. They want. It's not enough to do what you're doing. You now have to stifle the very words that demonstrate what you're doing and that it's wrong.
Well, that goes hand in hand with what was revealed at the end of the week by the British publication The Guardian, which investigated a federal elections case, and there was an organization that pretended to be a Democratic Party a Green Party organization, was supporting Green candidates in opposition to Democratic congressional candidates in the 2018 election with Facebook ads, and they laid out about $600,000, which is a considerable sum of money, to promote these Facebook ads opposing Democratic Party candidates. And it appeared to be the Green Party that was doing it. It turned out, not only was it not the Green Party doing it, it was the Trump organization that was doing it. Paid for it, organized it, and denied it when they were asked about it. And then in 2020, admitted it, admitting at the same time to having committed a federal crime, because that's a federal crime. So, you know, They're capable of everything, and they carry out their capabilities. They pass laws when they have the power to pass the laws. They lie when they have the opportunity to lie. They do whatever they can do to make sure that their opponents are split and they win.
Right. By the way, this is what the Russians did in 2016. They helped promote Green Party in place like Wisconsin, which made a difference. You know, you have that picture of Jill Stein sitting down and having dinner with Mike Flynn and Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
You know, the same principle there, except this is domestic rather than foreign interference.
But it's the same lies.
Yeah, yeah. I thought when you said late in the week you were going to come out with the story about the Department of Justice leak that showed that the Trump administration was we know that they'd been investigating behind the scenes or getting the phone records of reporters, but now it turns out
never before done in American history.
Right. Now it turns out that they got records from members of Congress who were investigating the Trump administration at the time, particularly Eric Swalwell and Adam Schiff.
And their children. Not only them, also family members, including children.
Staff members and children. And not only that, but then they got a gag order telling, because there's a law that supposedly if someone requests your records, the holder of the records is supposed to tell you in order to give you a chance to oppose it. But they got a gag order on Apple because you're talking about iPhones or iPads, that they couldn't even tell anybody that this has been happening.
So they couldn't tell the New York Times or the reporters in the New York Times or Adam Schiff or whoever.
Right. And then, of course, the Republican response to all this coming out was, we've got to investigate the leaks.
The leaks of who told about this investigation.
Right.
Not about the investigation, which is totally rotten.
Right. And this is actually, and then over the last 2 weeks, we've had another instance about leaks, which was that ProPublica came out and they published records of some of the billionaires in the United States showing that in various years they paid no or very little in taxes. And, of course, the reaction is also we've got to find out who leaked this information, punish the leaker, rather than go after the underlying issue, which is that the tax system is grossly unfair in these regards. Because as I've corresponded with a very conservative friend of mine, you go back and forth, the ordinary people can't hire lobbyists to write the tax laws in their favor or can't take advantage of various loopholes in the tax laws because it only applies to rich people. It doesn't apply to the ordinary people. And the one question that I keep asking and that you don't really hear, you know, from the defenders of the tax system are saying, well, that's just the way it is, or it's a good idea to be able to give these people loopholes and whatever because it encourages them to invest, is, well, if you or if corporations, we know like 55 of the largest corporations paid no income taxes back then. If you guys aren't paying taxes, if the wealthy aren't paying taxes and big businesses aren't paying taxes, then who has to make up the difference? And the answer is obvious. It's people like you, me, or those listening to the show. That's who has to make up the difference. You know,
that's only because Louis Gohmert hasn't entered the picture and figured out how to get the Bureau of Land Management to make up the difference.
That's, yeah, the Forest Service. Yeah, I mean, you know, corporations used to be about a third, 35% of the tax base of the United States. It's down to 7%. Where did the rest of them? And then they talk about, oh, we can't have deficits. Well, you guys are creating situations where you're building deficits in because you deliberately won't tax the people who could best afford to pay the tax.
This lying by the corporations and the apologists for the corporations about the taxes and the effective tax cuts goes hand in hand with the way they lie about why you can't raise wages. You know, they say you can't raise low paying the wages of low paid workers because consumers will have to pay for it. Right. It'll cost all prices will rise. And didn't you tell me that this week Chipotle raised its wages quite considerably?
Right.
And in fact, prices did go up. A typical burrito went up 5 cents.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, or even if it went up 20 cents.
Even if it went up 20 cents. Right, exactly.
You know, on a $7 or $7.50 thing, it's something that people could easily absorb. But, you know, they never blame the fact that the CEO got $38 million in in pay for the
which
year,
is the actual number, right? You didn't make that up. That's the actual number.
Yeah, that's the actual. I actually saw, and I can't remember the company, that some CEO got a $1.1 billion in salary and benefits last year or something like that. You know, it's pretty outrageous. But there are, you know, there are some ramifications. Some of the stockholders in some of these companies are starting to rebel that they're not going along with the government now has compelled companies to give an advisory opinion of stockholders as to whether or not they approve the executive compensation packages. And you're starting to see slowly that these approvals are failing, that some companies are saying, no, we don't approve, even though it's advisory. And that's a shot across the bow of things. You know, these boards that are just very compliant with the CEOs and the upper management.
Listen, if you're the manager, if you're the management of a company, one of your jobs is to make sure that your board follows your lead, not that you follow the board's lead.
Right.
And in fact, it's considered bad management if the board leads a company. The board is supposed to support the management. So I don't think you should hold your breath hoping for companies and boards of companies to be in the forefront of the fight against extortionate wage compensation demands by management. That's not going to happen. And I don't think you should hold your breath waiting for companies to be in the forefront of fighting for democracy and against voter restrictions. I don't think that's going to happen. If you want to have adequate and balanced compensation for people who are involved with corporations, you better support the unionization of the workers. Because that's the only social way, socially effective way that capitalism works. Corporations are regulated. It's an interest. It's a struggle between interest groups. And if the workers are not organized as an interest, then the management manages to do whatever it feels like doing. There's nothing you can do about it. And government is not going to change it because they control the government.
Well, that... You know, but it works much better if you're in manufacturing or if you're in government service than it does in some of these tech companies.
It's harder. It's harder. But I don't see there's any way around it. If the workers are not organized in defense of themselves, of their interests, of their needs, society does not benefit. Society suffers. Anyway, we've come to the end of this week, unfortunately, because I wanted to raise with you, what do you think the Democrats ought to do about all of this? So far, they're moaning that Manchin stands in the way. But if Manchin stands in the way, he stands in the way. What are you going to do about it? I'd like to talk about that next week. We don't have time this week.
We'll have to talk about that next week. Okay.
See you next week.
See you next week. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.